Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe. Please rate and review the program. I'm your host, Wayne Blue. Got co-host Blake Murphy with me. Blake, how was your Thursday night? What'd you do Thursday night other than watching the Blue Jays probably?
No, they were off.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, they played so poorly in the Houston series. Major League Baseball was like, no, we need a break from this. League-wide, we're taking the night off. The Raptors were off as well. We just, like, as Toronto sports fans, got a breather. Got to be real people for a night.
Yeah.
And then lock back in tonight because now it's Raptors, Jays, women's NCAA Final Four.
Yes.
It's WrestleMania weekend, Will, which I know is big for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Got you. Look forward to rooting for The Rock or whatever you guys do.
Whatever you guys do. I don't know, man. There's no...
Just enjoy it. It's just...
Yeah.
Do people root for individual wrestlers?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, Cody Rhodes is the big one this year that everyone's... There's no basketball tie-in that I can think of this year other than Logan Paul is wrestling and he's now the official the official drink of the Raptors now.
That's right.
That's the closest thing I got to a basketball tie-in.
Well, you know what? I was very appreciative of the fact that there was a little bit of time yesterday just to, like, disconnect a little bit. Had a great dinner in Alma. Shouts to Alma. If you haven't been to Alma, incredible meal made by Chef Anna. It's also, like, it's got two Michelin stars and everything like that. Like, it's, you know, not to brag, but it was a phenomenal meal. Yeah. So
they couldn't get that third one or what?
No. I think they just had, like, for two different years on the little plaques.
Yeah, I'm kidding, man. That's crazy. Yeah, that's really good. I haven't been there, but it looked... Wait, you told me about it yesterday.
Go to Burdock Brewery afterwards, right beside it. Get some brews. Is Grange on the line?
Yeah, man.
Grange's on the line this whole time.
He's just listening. He's bringing up the menu right now. He's like, oh, I got to get Will to break me off some...
At the end of the season, you deserve some Alma, man. You put in a lot of work covering this... This flaming tire fire, and just hope you treat yourself at the end of it, you know?
I fantasize. I spend a lot of time thinking about the end of the season.
Yeah. No 1-2-3 Cancun for you, Grange?
There'll be 1-2-3 something. I promise you that.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get to that, I mean, another major story written by you with Elliot Freeman as well on this one. And you know it's big time when you got to bring in Elliot for this too.
Before we get into the actual very serious article, I have a very goofy question. And I texted Ellie about this, making fun a little bit, but how did you guys decide? So the byline is Michael Grange and Elliot Freeman, but you got the headshot. It's your headshot there. Do you guys like debate over that? You're like, oh, like in the Google Doc, this was 54% written by Grange, so he gets the headshot. Not that you're not a big deal, but that's Elliot Freeman and you got the headshot over him.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but Elliot's a great guy and he's awesome to work with and he's very gracious and you know, I kind of approached him and said, listen, I've got some things I think are important to write about and obviously you have some insights that I might not have based on kind of where you spend most of your time. And so he was happy to chip in and very gracious in terms of how we shared the credit. And I think it made it a lot better.
Yeah. Okay. So the piece is up on sportsnet.ca. With MLSC ownership and teams in flux, Keith Pelley will have his hands full in a new role. Grange, we'll start from the very top. Who is Keith Pelley? What is his new role?
Yeah. Keith Pelley is a guy who, he's been a behind the scenes operator. He's been very much in the front of the house operator in the Toronto sports scene for a long, long time. I mean, going back, decades, he was the president. He ran TSN for many years. And then most recently, before he was off in Europe running the European PGA Tour, he ran Rogers Sportsnet, Rogers Media, not just Sportsnet, all of Rogers Media. And in between that, he was the kind of force behind what was called the Olympic Broadcast Consortium, where Rogers and Bell Media came together to help broadcast the 2010 games. He's worn a bunch of other hats in between that. He ran the Toronto Argonauts briefly, of course, won a Grey Cup when he was doing that. So he's very familiar with all the big players in kind of the MLSC picture, and and they are in turn familiar with him.
So in terms, and obviously there is a lot in this article about the future of Larry Tannenbaum and his ownership share, and we want to get to that. But with respect to Pelly, this the way it reads and everything we know about him, but the way you and Elliot laid it out, is this is a big change in the CEO chair relative to how things have operated the last couple years. This is closer to the Tim Leiwicki model back in 2015, where he was a very visible part of the organization. A lot, you know, a lot of what you heard about Masai Ujiri, about Brandon Shanahan and things like that were attached to Leiwicki. And then since he's left, it's been less public-facing people or intern people in those roles, and, you know, Masai and Shanahan with the direct line to the board rather than through the CEO if they wanted that. How big a change is this going to be in terms of how a Masai Ujiri operates with, you know, Keith Pelly now in that CEO role?
You know, I think there's two ways to answer that. I think practically not all that much. I think, you know, the presidents that that Tim Leiwicki hired, being, you know, most prominently Brendan Shanahan on the hockey side, and of course Masai Ujiri here with the Raptors, were given a lot of leeway, a lot of power, a lot of responsibility, a lot of a profile, and, you know, and freedom to kind of, and support to kind of pursue their agendas, which were very aggressive and I think quite fruitful. And so much so that I think when Tim Leiwicki left, there was an appetite to kind of just keep the status quo and let these guys kind of run their silos and keep succeeding, sort of thing. What's going to happen, I believe, now that Keith Pelly is in charge, is he will be very much in charge. And so, you know, I think it takes it a little bit out of the board's hands. It's more in Keith's hands, and he's going to be the person reporting to the board about the progress plans, focus for, you know, the three primary drivers within MLSE being obviously TFC, the Raptors, and the Leafs. And, you know, just by the nature of that, your team presidents are a little less powerful. They you know, there's not that they ever were using an end around kind of thing, but, you know, the kind of buck stops with Keith Pelly. And that's I think the most practical thing. I'm not sure if it's going to really tangibly mean much in the competitive landscape, because, you know, the interests of MLSE, you know, I don't think they change all that much. Is the better your teams are doing, the better product you're putting out there, the more you're generating, you know, all the positive synergies that kind of make your company go. But it is a change, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the last change, but I think it's the first one of what I think will be some significant ones.
Okay, so as you mentioned here, Larry is going to be bought out. That's the expectation. And at that point, the MLSE board will be 50-50, and I wouldn't necessarily say that our company here at Rogers or with Bell, you know, it's, I don't know. 50-50 sounds like it could be a real stalemate. Is Keith going to manage and navigate that?
And sorry, just for background detail for anyone who doesn't know, the way things currently work, you know, Bell has 3 voting shares on the 8-person exec board. Rogers has 3, and Larry Tannenbaum has control 2.
Right.
So Larry Tannenbaum has kind of been the tiebreaker, for lack of a better term. If it were to be 50-50, where Rogers and Bell both have 4, and there is a, you know, a stalemate between Rogers' interests and Bell interests, say, how much of Keith Pelly's job come 2026, if this plays out, is managing that potential 50-50 friction if it does exist?
I think that's going to be a big part of it. And I think really, you know, what I think all this portends is, you know, even a bigger change than just Larry leaving. And I think, you know, I kind of hinted at it in the piece, and you can't, you know, you don't have a crystal ball. You can't predict exactly how these things go. But, you know, I think that there is a world where it doesn't stay 50-50. That, you know, one of the existing owners ends up becoming the controlling owner, if not the only owner. And if you were kind of looking at the profile of the various interests involved, you know, you'd sort of handicap it and say it would be sort of the Rogers piece. They're the, you know, they're the company that has an existing, pre-existing sports franchise that they own wholly, and That's obviously the Toronto Blue Jays. And, you know, there you talk to people within the sports community, the business community, and they can kind of envision a world where, you know, MLSC falls under the Edward Rogers umbrella and is joined there with the Blue Jays. And it is one massive conglomeration.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's not all that different than what I think Larry Tannenbaum was hoping and had sort of been working to achieve for a long time in his own right. And then you look at the Bell interest and look, they've had an amazing run and they've certainly, you know, their investment I think is probably quadrupled since they got into this, into the ownership stake with MLSC. But, you know, if, you know, how long do, you know, maybe they want to cash out. Maybe there's an opportunity for them to cash out. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is above my area of expertise, but, you know, I think the fundamental thing here is Larry, right? Larry is probably going to be bought out. On paper, it should happen sometime in 2026. You know, these things can change. And then we've already seen where Larry Tannenbaum has started his own sports venture company. So he's going to have his own, he's going to be heard, I think, in his own way. But, you know, we're looking for at a very different environment, I think, 2-3 years from now than we have today.
Okay. Assuming Larry's out 2026, as expected, where does that leave Masai? Because we know the reporting around Masai's contract negotiations the last time it came up. And we know that Larry has always been a really strong backer of Masai. And we also have learned through this piece that Masai's contract was actually a 5-year deal, and it actually lines up with Larry's deal. So if Larry's out, does that mean Masai is out potentially?
You know, I'm not going to draw a straight line to that, but it's not unreasonable to kind of wonder about that. You know, and I think there's a lot of things that can happen. And there was a lot of reporting and good reporting done around Masai's contract negotiation, which was very prolonged, right? Like, I mean, it got sewn up in August of 2021, but, you know, it had been kind of brewing for a long time before that. And among the concerns were the changing face of MLSC at that time. And where would Masai, you know, where would his kind of support lie? And I think what also kind of bubbled into the public sphere and is just how contentious some of the ownership relationships are at the board level. And, you know, and I think when Masai was pushing for his deal, the kind of the pushback came from the Rogers side. And it was, you know, I think there's that relationship has been mended. I think it's amicable, it's functional. But at the time it was, you know, do we need to invest this much into the president of our basketball team? And by the way, a lot of those same questions were asked around investing in the president of the hockey and the soccer operations too. And it was based on, is this the best way for us to spend our money? And I think right now they're spending about $25 million annually on three team presidents. And you kind of look how each of those teams have done in the last 3 or 4 years. It's, you know, sort of be hard to justify. So I think that's where the questions are going to get asked. And what the answers are, you know, I'm not going to sit here and predict, but I think it's reasonable based on kind of pre-existing relationships that, yeah, you could be looking at a change with Masai Ujiri and the Raptors.
How could that affect, obviously we're talking about 2026, so the end of the 2025-2026 season, that's two full seasons from now. However, we know that when these things get closer to potential expiration dates, you know, sometimes the two sides will call it early because, hey, do you want someone steering the ship who is not going to be here? Do you want someone trading draft picks who's not going to be here to wear the freight of that? Do you want someone... You know, there are different things with respect to timeline. And that's before getting into, you know, I don't think my read on it has always been Masai wouldn't do the job if he didn't have basketball autonomy, like roster autonomy and things like that. The NBA has very strict rules about the minimums you can spend anyway. So really the decisions are not about spending. It's about how you chop that money up. But the timeline kind of thing and how quickly this rebuild, how quick that rebuild is, how quickly that becomes a retooling and they're trying to be competitive again is maybe something that at the CEO level, it's important for there to be alignment between the MLSC CEO and the president of the Raptors. Given that Masai is now kind of, I guess, on a two-year clock, if that's how we're looking at this, and that those are the details of his contract, how tough could that be to navigate this coming offseason? It's such a big offseason for the Raptors in terms of decision-making around when is the timeline going to be around Scottie Barnes, probably the last time they have cap space for a while, potentially a couple high draft picks in this draft, and the ability to maybe move those for win-now pieces. Like, how much does that question mark hanging over things potentially bleed into this offseason?
You know, it's a great question. It's a pressing question. But I guess the way I would answer that is, you know, this almost identical set of circumstances has been part of the Raptors' story for a few years now, or previous years, right? So we've seen Masai Ujiri kind of get all the way to free agency. Remember, that's how we were talking about back then. And, you know, he's always been very consistent in terms of making decisions that suit, you know, the long-term plan or medium-term goals of the team. In other words, I don't think it's, you know, he's, I don't think it's these changes we're talking about are going to affect decisions made this summer in terms of who gets drafted, what you do with picks, these kinds of things. I think it's going to be, you know, business as usual. Until it's not, and then it'll be, you know, I think we'll find out what happens then. So, that's the way I would answer that is if you look back at the history of with Masai and various contract, eras he's been in, he's kind of conducted himself really consistently. So I don't think there's going to be a sharp veer one way or the other.
Yeah. So I think, thinking back to when the last round of negotiations were with Masai, I think part of the frustration or confusion from the fan base was like, number one, obviously we really like Masai as a person, but also we love the fact that what he's done with the Raptors, it was unprecedented. They had won the championship over his previous, you know, tenure there, had multiple winning seasons, and it was like, when can we just get this done? Let's sew it up. I mean, what else can he do? Obviously, he's earned whatever he's asking for. I think in the 5 years, and I guess only been three, but the 5 years plus the next 2 years coming up, it's like, will he have done enough to, you know, make it as much of a slam dunk? And I think that, for me, is very much an open question. I mean, I'm not going to put anything past him in terms of just being able to turn things around really quickly or find some sort of really incredible prospect or, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that can go into this, and that's why you pay him the big bucks. But if it kind of goes the same way it's gone the last 3 years, then it's a much, much harder negotiation, and it was already a hard one to begin with. Like,
I mean, I think that's really well phrased. Well, I mean, if his name wasn't Masai Ujiri, if it was somebody else, and you look at the track record of the last 3 or 4 years, you know, you'd give whoever it was really high marks on Scottie Barnes. I think obviously a great pick and a great decision to tank for that pick. And, you know, I think Grady Dick has turned out to be a really good pick at number 13. But you know, there's a lot of other decisions, and we've all spent a lot of time nitpicking on them that, you know, kind of deserve scrutiny, right? And they haven't all worked out perfectly. And you're kind of, you know, you're in a direction now that, did you actually choose to be in this direction, or did it kind of, was it kind of handed to you by circumstance? And had you chosen it or sooner, could you have been further along in the process of rebuilding or retooling? So those are all really fair questions. I think it's nearly impossible, at least for me, to kind of separate the fact that there is a lot of fortune and luck that goes into building NBA rosters. And I think also when you look at, you know, what he has brought to the organization from 2013-14 until, you know, let's just say today, I mean, you know, that's a lot of equity.
Oh, yeah.
That is a lot
Absolutely.
Of equity.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's a mistake to sort of go, just because things have kind of hit the skids here a little bit, to kind of start dancing around and going, you know, time to move on. But, you know, I think it's a fair question. I think it is this is a results-based business. And, you know, and I think it's quite fair to say that, you know, if and when these decisions end up being made, and I don't know if it goes right to 2 years from now, maybe it's a year from now, I don't know. you know, the record, say post 2020, will be part of those decisions. And conversely, you know, the reverse is also true. One of those reasons those negotiations pushed out so hard was, you know, Masai Ujiri was, he was a free agent. He was looking around at other opportunities, both within the NBA and beyond. And he did have some other opportunities. Right. And, you know, that was all part of, just like any free agent, right? That's all part of getting, you know, it's not getting the best opportunity, best deal he could for himself. He did it. I think it, at the time he was, if not the highest paid executive in North America, he was very, very close, depending on how you calculate some of the other packages. And, you know, but those questions all get asked again, you know, either sometime in this, in the future, which is kind of coming on a little quicker than maybe most people expected.
At least that future is coming on, I mean, quicker than people expected, but also mercifully at this point. There are only six games left in this season.
But that's part of this whole discussion. It's like, yeah, you can't let the product get to the point where people, like, whatever, diehard fans are all going to watch. Diehard fans are probably like, it's actually a good thing that they're tanking, getting more lottery odds and all that kind of stuff. I think the bigger business, like, is the casual person of being like, hey, you want to go to a Raptors game? Sure, why not? I've never been. Or like, yeah, I liked it. I loved it. I went a couple years ago. Let's go again. Those are the actual
people. Are you losing the people that came on in 2019?
And the consumer confidence in the product is lower and lower. Like, I don't think you would talk to the average person who is in those shoes, and they're like, yes, I'm so excited. It's like, I heard the Raptors are not good right now.
A 45% chance at a top six pick in a weak draft class that might contribute 3 years from now. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I think, at least speaking for myself, but I do suspect you guys are similar on this. I totally agree. Like, from my perspective, I would like to see them continue to show faith in Masai, because Masai has brought this franchise so much more success than you've ever had in terms of when you look at the historical perspective. I'm just trying to look at it from the changing ownership landscape, the fact that he's got a new boss. And honestly, the last time a new boss came in was Tim Leiwicki, who brought Masai in. Like, when you bring in new boss, it typically does relate to new personnel coming in as well.
Yeah, know? It does. And that would, I mean, I'd
I'm
imagine
to see from their perspective.
Yeah. And I'd imagine those conversations are ongoing. Like, Michael even included in his piece that Pelly was at a practice the other day, chopping it up with Masai and Bobby, you know, learning that new offense. At this point, roster wise, Keith Pelly might get some minutes at backup center too, to really get a feel for the product. But no, you're right. Like, there is how Keith Pelly, and to a greater extent come 2026, what could be a changing board of MLSE, who are Pelly's bosses, that's who he reports to, how they weigh legacy and equity built versus what have you done for me lately, is going to be really interesting to see play out. And, you know, I don't think this was set to be a long Piston-style multi-year teardown anyway. They just, the front office just hasn't shown that DNA for years. But you do wonder if that kind of thing, you know, maybe turns a 2.5-year rebuild into what an attempt at a 1.5-year rebuild or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, look, I still ultimately do, to your earlier question, like, Masai's not done anything that makes me feel like I don't trust that he's acting in the franchise's best interest versus his own best interest. Like, it's been very clear. He's acting in the franchise's
best interest. Yeah, just sometimes you miss, or sometimes your timing's a little off. You have too much, you know, too much. What was his phrase? He had too much patience with the last group. Maybe could have...
ask Masai about last year's team, even now, he'll tell you, he's like, I don't know why it didn't work. It should have worked.
I mean, look at the players that were on that team around the league right now. Like obviously,
he's not just like him right
OG's
now.
Hurt, but like the Raptors 2022 roster is like the EPM leaderboard. Like, it's all like Jeff Doughton's back in the lead. Delano Band's killing it. Like, all these things. Anyway, those things are difficult. Grange, we're a couple games away from the end here. I know your focus, in addition to this big MLSE piece, has, as most of us has been on Grady Dick. Is how he closes out the season here kind of the most front of mind thing for you as we play out the string here?
Yeah, it has been. It'll be interesting. You know, I'm glad that they've gained some separation between the Grizzlies. And so hopefully something that looks a little bit more like a NBA roster on the floor with Grady Dick. I think there's been diminishing returns recently. You know, when you're putting out a team of guys who just collectively, no shade on anybody, just aren't ready to compete at the NBA level. And so I think when you're the rookie out there who's kind of a dependent player, it's hard to look good. So hopefully, you know, if you get RJ back, you get Quick back, you got, you know, a little bit more semblance of structure out there, and you know, he can continue to take some of these lessons and carry them into summer league. But I think his, you know, I think he's been a very, he's had an outsized importance, I'd say, this year. And I think it comes from a couple of places. One is, you know, there haven't been a ton of draft successes or new finds talent-wise outside Scotty, obviously. And so when early in the season, when it looked like he was really struggling, and, you know, we're all like, hey, you can't judge a rookie based on 2 months, but it was a tough 2 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he got swept up in some of those doubts and questions. And I think conversely, once the season kind of shifted hard to a rebuild and seeing the kind of 2 months he was able to put up, let's say in February and most of March, I think it was really encouraging. I think it became kind of the most exciting thing about this season almost.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, you know, hopefully going forward, there's a lot more of what we've seen in, you know, January, February, and a bit of March than what we saw before that.
I'd love to read a piece about that at sportsnet.ca next week.
Oh, I am working on a piece about that. Yeah. So that should be out next week, but got a lot of typing to go still.
Yeah. Well, the season started with Grady getting sent down to the G League, and the season's ending with the G League being sent up to Grady. So Grange, we appreciate you. We'll see you back at Scotiabank Arena on Sunday. And you know, we'll appreciate you breaking all this thing down for us, because this is a lot of high level stuff, especially at the ownership level in terms of management at MLSC. And it's quite confusing, honestly, without the explainers and the reporting. So I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. And we're all just along for the ride.
Thanks, Grange. All right, we're going to take that break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Please be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Big thanks to Michael Grange for coming on and breaking down all the Palace intrigue. I love the Toronto version of Succession that is taking place in the city. But it will be a lot of questions as to what the Raptors do in the bigger picture. However, in the minor picture, in the smaller picture, it's time now for today's spicy take, brought to you by new Chunky Spicy Soup. Are you ready to get fired up? Here is the take for this week. The tank for the Raptors, it's over. It's actually mission accomplished. Okay. The Raptors have already locked in for lottery odds. They're 3 games behind Memphis at 7, and they're 3 games up on Portland at 5. The Raptors are the 6th best lottery odds. Portland plays the Celtics, the Pelicans, and 3 play-in hopefuls. They're not getting 3 wins. And guess what? The Raptors aren't getting 3 wins either to threaten their way back above Memphis. But here's the thing. Despite saying that, the Raptors actually do need to do whatever possible not to finish the year on a 21-game losing streak, which honestly, at this current rate, there's a real chance of it. The Raptors obviously coming off a 48-point loss in Minneapolis. But yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want to do that. At number 6 right now, the Raptors have a 46% chance at keeping their first round pick this year, should it stay in the top 6. And whatever, we've accepted this. This is the price of the Acapulco trade. If it doesn't, you know, convey this year, then the same threat will roll over for next year, et cetera, et cetera. But at least this year, the Raptors are locked in at 6. Basically, there's no way that they can really change the standings. At this point, you're just going to have to sweat it out until May 12th when the NBA does the lottery draw in Chicago. So putting the tanking portion aside, which again is over, the Raptors just got to focus on themselves. Do they really want to finish a year on a 21-game losing streak? Is it fair to Darko and the players to get grilled about this as season, you know, end? When the locker room cleanout comes, Masai probably, whoever from front office, and it better be Masai, he should be asked about this. But honestly, for the team itself, do they really want to finish on a 21-game losing streak? Honestly, this might sound corny, but does reputation not even matter at this point? You know what I mean? Like, what happens to winning culture? Obviously, that's probably out the door anyway. My point is, just go out there and snap the streak. It's safe. It's safe to win again, okay? It's safe. And ideally, you snap the streak at home. Washington, this Sunday, It's at home. It's at 6 p.m. It's perfect. You know, you get Kelly, RJ, Emmanuel, Bruce Brown, Gary Trent, Ochai, if he's not sore anymore. Get those guys in the lineup maybe one last time, whatever. Just go get that result. It's Washington at home. And again, it's safe to win now. The lottery odds aren't changing. And guess what? The game after that is also at home, and it's even better. It's the season finale, at least at home, for the Raptors. Clearly not going to play no play-in or playoffs. And it's against the Pacers. And guess what? You want to tank? You actually improve your lottery position or your draft position if you beat the Pacers, whose pick you actually own. Now, of course, that's a much more difficult thing to do, to beat the Pacers than the Wizards. But honestly, get those players together one last time. Play those two games out. Get some wins. This season is already one of the worst in franchise history, okay? You have longtime vets like Garrett Temple saying on our program that he's never seen anything like this, and he's literally seen it all, right? This guy was on Washington. He was on Sacramento. He was on Brooklyn. Please, don't end the season on a 21-game losing streak. At least save a bit of dignity at the end. That is the spicy take of this week.
It's a good spicy take, and I agree with it. Memphis also plays Detroit tonight, so Memphis might win another game. And like, if you're the Raptors, you're not winning four games the rest of the way.
It's safe to win.
Yeah, and you know you've got the road game at Brooklyn, which maybe you win, but those last two games this season, Miami still has a chance to avoid the play-in. They're going to be wanting those games like hell. Indiana's going to want that game like hell because they're trying to avoid the play-in right now. There's also draft pick wise, there's like a. If you could beat Indiana and you knock them down into the play-in, say Indiana, if you lose in the play-in, you don't make the playoffs, you enter the lottery.
Oh, yeah. Now, we just saw that with the Raptors. Yeah. With Grady Dick. Yeah.
So that pick is top three protected, so you wouldn't want the Pacers to, like, win the lottery.
They'd have to literally win the lottery to win the lottery.
Yeah, there. But, hey, it's non-0% chance, right? So you got to pay mind to it. But, yeah, there is incentive to win these games. And, like, again, they're not catching Portland on the other. Portland is not going to win three games. Mm-hmm. Memphis is not going to, the Raptors aren't going to win four games. Memphis will probably win tonight. You could just play.
Yeah.
And it's
here's a novel concept. You could just go out there and play and win the game.
Yeah.
And put your best players available and play them in a way that will try to win the game. I know it's not been done for a while, but I would love to see it done at least one more.
And whatever. If it's not tonight because you want to give those guys who are banged up one more day, and you know, focus on Sunday, whatever, because it's the Bucks tonight and the Wizards on Sunday or whatever.
I did not say tonight. Don't worry.
The Bucks did just lose to the Wizards and the Grizzlies on a back to back.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would love to do a little bit of Doc Rivers slander, I guess, if they win tonight.
You know their record with Doc Rivers?
What's the record with Doc Rivers now? Is it 500?
Yeah, 15-15.
God, that's tough. I mean, I don't think Griffin did a great job with the team. We discussed it plenty on the show, but I think the record was 31-13.
Yeah, they were way above 500. Yeah, they were the second. I mean, they're still second in the East, but they were second in the East when they let him go.
Yeah. The East is kind of mid.
Yeah, it is. Like, we just met Indiana and Miami fighting to avoid the play-in.
They've been 15-15, and they're still second in the East.
Like, yeah, like, how did nobody catch up that ground?
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, in the West, the Warriors keep winning. They had a really good win against Houston. Yesterday, I guess that was the only team that was, like, kind of threatening them.
Yeah, they can clinch tonight.
Yeah. So, you know, what they got rid of that. We've seen the Lakers come into town. The Lakers have been winning quite a bit now as well. 8-2 in the last 10. You know, like, the West is the West.
Yeah, the only teams that really aren't, like, cooking in the of those 11 teams at the top of the West, like, Sacramento lost Monk and Herter. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I still maintain they were overperforming a little bit. I don't want to ding them now because they're missing two key rotation pieces. But, like, they've slid a little bit. And even they've won six of their last 10. They've just, like, lost ground relative. And then the Pelicans have lost three in a row, which is, you know, always the Pelicans just have this penchant over the last couple of years to
they're
just, like,
team.
Have weeks where they look bad. But they've also like looked really good at times this year.
Right.
So I don't know. The West is a thresher, and it's going to make for some like really fun games these last couple weeks where, there is still like Golden State probably can't get out of the play-in, but the Lakers, Kings, and Pelicans all probably think they could catch Phoenix and or Dallas.
Yeah.
The Clippers are the only team that are really like insulated in a spot because the other three teams are all within a game of each other for home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoff bracket, which like maybe you don't care that much about being the one seed because like, okay, well you might end up with like the Lakers or Warriors on the other side of that. Is that really that great a prize? But you do want home court through like, hey, if you're going to have to beat the Nuggets, you'd rather do that at home than on the road. So it's going to be fascinating there. And then, yeah, in the East, basically, it's like, well, everyone's still jockeying for position, but it's like, hey, Philadelphia didn't win. Philadelphia didn't play good basketball for like a month when Embiid and Maxey are out. And then after Embiid comes back, two good wins, they could, like, they're right on the edge of avoiding the play-in now. It's like, that's how mid the East has been. That just, hey, give me two games with Embiid back, and we're right back in this.
No, it's look, in the West, I genuinely feel like I'm not entirely sure, other than Denver, who obviously I'm very, very sure in. But outside of them, like, you tell me any of these other two teams and the rest of the teams in the playoffs, like, lose in the first round, like, it wouldn't even be that surprised. Like, if Minnesota lost in the first round because they matched up with, like, the Lakers, like, it wouldn't be that big of a surprise. It would be disappointing for Minnesota, for example.
Yeah.
But you're like, okay, well, you know, like, you lost to LeBron and AD. That's difficult. OKC, if they, right now they're the third seed, they play Phoenix. Okay, I'd be a little surprised if Phoenix just doesn't impress me that much.
Yeah.
But still, like, it's not unreasonable that, like, a team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant outplay, you know, OKC, a really young squad coming up. You know, the 4-5 right now is the Lakers or the Clippers versus Dallas, which would be really interesting.
Yeah. Big question there. And with rematch, anything Clippers being Kawhi being out again right now and coming off a road trip with knee soreness.
Right.
I know people have their, like, tongue in cheek. Oh, he got his 65 games. And now I saw someone say he's using all his PTO now because he got his 65 games in.
Yeah, you and I would know nothing about that.
But
actually.
Yeah.
We're the exact opposite as comes to workers.
No comment. It's a concern, obviously, that Kawhi's knee's banged up now. But yeah, like the West is going to be.
Dude, we just saw the Clippers beat the Nuggets last night.
Yeah.
You know, and that was without Kawhi as well. And I mean, and Jokic played MVP level as he always does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no Jamal Murray, so obviously that's a big factor too. But, like, I don't know. Sometimes I watch the Nuggets, and I'm like, they are kind of, like, really short in the rotation. Like, when they play their starters, phenomenal. They crush everybody. I had no doubts. But, like, I trust, like, two guys off that bench.
It's tough. And, like,
that's a lot of Reggie Jackson.
And, and, like, one of the guys I trust off the bench is Peyton Watson, who is, like, a really, really fun, high-event guy. But, like, there are games where it's like, you're doing too much, man. Like, you gotta, and maybe they're giving him the freedom to do that and he can dial it back. And again, I'm a big Peyton Watson guy, but yeah, there's some risk there of, like, there are bad stretches. And, like, Christian Brown plays 30 minutes sometimes off your bench.
Yeah.
Who's, again, is solid, like, but they don't trust Julian Strother at this point anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
This is my,
it's tough, man. The West is so tough.
This is like my not so spicy take is the Nuggets actually do miss Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
Like they fully miss that version of Bruce Brown. Not like the one that's shown up in Toronto with the suitcase packed, but like the one that was in like Denver's rotation last year. Like he was really, really productive. And that's where, again, if you're going back to the Raptors, like that's where it's like you hope that people still remember that version. And that's the value that it continues to have because.
Call me up in July, Denver. What's up?
No, but seriously, though, I mean, Bruce was always going to get cashed out after that winning the title and everything like that. And Indiana came through with this really creative offer, which also allowed them to get Pascal Siakam without touching the rotation. But, like, hasn't really worked out for Bruce, I would say, other than the payout.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't worked out for the Nuggets either. Like, it just kind of, like, hurt the whole situation.
And, like, I get it. As Denver, like, with that ownership, like, they're never going to be a deep tax team, I don't think.
No,
like, not
Bruce
super.
Brown $22 million, man. Come
right.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, they couldn't really anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they could have given him the, you know, you could have figured it out with the mid-level and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, yeah, if you're Bruce Brown, you get 2 years worth of mid-level in 1 year. Even if the Raptors, you know, let's say they decided, well, we're declining the team option. We can't find a trade. We don't want to pay you $23 million. Mm. Bruce Brown would, like, still get the full mid-level. So he basically got 1 year. Like, worst-case scenario, he got 1 year of $22 million and then can get the same mid-level contract that he was going to get last year. By the way, Woj just tweeted out the NBA sent out new salary cap projections for this coming summer.
Right,
they are the same as the last update, which, I mean, those are the numbers we've been operating under, but they're a little underwhelming. The jump is only about 3.5%, whereas the last couple years it's jumped 10%. So,
right. Interesting. All right. Well, maybe I don't know. I guess they're still negotiating for the new TV deal and everything like that. So
yeah, I believe this one runs out at the end of next season.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Can I ask you, let me throw you we rarely do this on this show, but it is sports radio. Can I give you the flaming sports radio topic that is like not entirely serious, but a little bit disingenuous, but still pretty fun?
Sure.
So Shams also reported that Bronny James is declared for the 2024 NBA draft. He is also entering the transfer portal as well. So basically, and he's eligible to come back to college, depending on if he doesn't like necessarily how the draft process works. So all his options are on the table, except for the fact that he's not going back to USC. Okay. But anyway, he is entering the 2024 NBA draft. The Raptors do potentially have three picks in this draft. Blake Murphy, do you want to see the Raptors draft Bronny, which could potentially lead a team like the Raptors with a lot of cap room to also sign LeBron?
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to happen.
Why not? Like,
because
didn't we do a whole segment on this show where we're like, we got all this money, right? You option. Okay, Bruce Brown, sorry, no player option. Gary Trent, sorry, you're not getting re-signed. You know, we'll wait to re-sign quickly. All of a sudden, you have a lot of cap room. You do have picks. You could take Bronny and sign LeBron. I'm just saying.
Yes, I understand that layout and that theory. I think the likelier scenario would be you take Bronny at, say, 31, and then LeBron makes the Lakers call you and, like, give you a too much value for Bronny trade. Because LeBron would be like, I don't want to leave the Lakers, but I want to play with Bronny.
That guy Anthony Davis. Can I have him?
But like, imagine like you.
How much you want your son, LeBron?
Like you take him as a second round pick, and like your plan is to leverage the Lakers into giving you like a future first or something like that for a second for a guy you just took in the second.
We're using picks to take kids hostage. So like, what are we doing?
This is the other thing. Is like if the Raptors
Bronny
were
James, not Sue Young. Man.
If the Raptors were in a better competitive situation, maybe you could get creative with that. But like, yeah, at the 31st pick, you gotta use that pick properly. The Lakers do have the 55th pick, though. That's where it gets really interesting. Is like, because like right now,
you really want to be drafted to your dad's team with the 55th pick. It just doesn't quite hit the same as Ken Griffey Senior.
No, junior, it doesn't. You know? But also, like, you get to play with your dad for a year.
Oh, I'm sure that's what every 19-year-old wants. Man. Yeah, they're just like, I'm looking forward to more time with my dad at 19.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's time with your dad at 19 on a two-way deal making $400K or going back to school and, like, being a, like, I don't know. Like, look, Bronny's season got derailed because of the health issues that he dealt with. Mm-hmm. But, like, this is a prospect who, when he was, like, 14, 15 years old, was considered close to the number one in his class.
Yeah, sure.
And now is, like, I mean, I haven't read the, like, Vecinis and Giovanni's and Jeremy Wu's take on this yet.
Yeah.
But, like, from everything I understand, he is not an NBA prospect right now.
Okay.
So this would be, like, and look, this doesn't necessarily mean he's entering the NBA draft. You have until May 31st to withdraw. That means you can go through workouts with teams. Yeah. You can go to the combine. You can do the G League Elite Camp.
It's
a valuable Chicago
experience. It really is.
And a lot more guys do it now that you're allowed to, because the withdraw date used to be much earlier, and you wouldn't be able to get this feedback from teams and stuff like that. So that's helpful. I also wonder if this is keeping open the decision for him of like, yeah, do I want to do college and continue down the path of trying to be like a legitimate, get back to being a legitimate NBA prospect? Or like, I could make the jump, probably get a two-way with the Lakers and like continue my development in the G League in a pro environment, which like there is a developmental argument for that. It's just, as I understand it from the people who have watched Bronny and covered Bronny, like he's not at that level of prospect. Like purely developmentally, he should probably go back to college.
Yeah. Thank you for entertaining this little shock radio segment.
Yeah, I probably probably too serious about it, but no.
No.
The Raptors are not in a good enough place talent-wise to get funny with their draft picks.
I just think, like, this is where I think LeBron actually, ironically, even though he named them after himself, right, he is LeBron James Jr., although he is Bronny, but, like, I think LeBron had said it too. He didn't want to put the expectation on him this degree, and I think that's the part that's like really unfair. It's like, it's hard to talk about just Bronny as a player, as a prospect, and not ever bring up LeBron, you know. And I mean, I don't think the conversation is complete without doing it, but it does kind of like just rob him of his own agency. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's even talking about picking him because of his merits as a player. They're all talking about it like, well, how could we get LeBron in this, like, you know, BOGO deal, basically. Like,
and that
sucks, man. That totally sucks. Yeah,
it does. And I think it would really suck if, and again, there's the health part of this that obviously complicated his path as a prospect this year. I think it would really suck if you were like a borderline first round pick kind of prospect, or like early second round pick kind of prospect. I think it sucks a little less if you're like an undrafted kind of prospect where it's like, okay, this is your path. Like the Thanasis element.
Right.
Like, I don't know. You just kind of have to accept where you are. If that's your only path in, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, That one's different because you could like, it's one thing. It's like, all right, you're holding it down for your brothers, which is exactly what Giannis has done. And that's actually, honestly, if you get into the whole family dynamic, like, that's what Thanasis has done for all his younger brothers.
Yeah.
And so Giannis is trying to pay him back. And honestly, Thanasis is, like, good enough at least to, like, you know, like, be in the league.
I'm not criticizing it.
It's like a, he's a highlight reel when he goes in because he'll make a big mistake or here or two. But, like, he's okay-ish. But, like, that's totally different than, like, father and son, man.
Yeah, and we don't have a father and son example, right?
We like
really it's,
don't.
It's, the Griffey one that you mentioned, like, it happened for a minute. It was really, really cool. But, like, this doesn't really happen. So there's nothing to compare it to. And I don't know.
Is it compelling to you, like, if LeBron and his son play together in the league for a couple
years? Yeah, it's fun. Like, okay, it would be, like, it's a, I don't know, it's a cool, like, footnote toward the end of LeBron's career.
It's
something we've never seen before. And I think more than anything, it really does hammer home LeBron's longevity.
Yeah. You know what? You're absolutely right. Yeah.
All right. It's time now for Between Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. The Raptors are 15-point underdogs tonight at Milwaukee, over under set at 227.5. They will have RJ and Kelly Olynyk back, who sat out last game because of the back-to-back.
Yeah.
Gary Trent Jr. with the back issue is questionable.
Okay.
Bruce Brown with the knee issue is questionable. Okay. Ochai Agbaji with the hip issue is questionable.
That's actually really promising.
Yeah. Especially if you look ahead to Sunday, like the fact that those three guys are up in the air for tonight.
Right.
Barnes, Pirtle, Boucher, Carton, Porter all still out. But yeah, Trent, Brown, and Agbaji could potentially play. On the Bucks side, and they've gone a little bit Lakers with this lately, where Giannis and Dame are questionable a lot of the time. But Giannis and Dame are both questionable for this game. Pat Bev is as well. And then Marshawn Beauchamp.
You got to get humbled by Pat Bev again.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Marshawn Beauchamp, doubtful if you care about that. So the Bucks did just lose to the Wiz and Grizzlies on a back-to-back, and they've lost 4 of 5. And that's with Giannis and Dame, like, playing a bunch of these games. Mm-hmm. They now only have a game and a half lead on Cleveland for the 2 seed. I don't know how much they care about that. But, losing 4 or 5 right before the playoffs, probably not the best. The Bucks probably want this one.
Yeah, I would say, okay, cautiously, I would say if you got to wait, obviously, to see who's available, especially when it's like Giannis and Dame. I would definitely wait to see if Giannis is available. Giannis is available, I don't think the Raptors have a chance. Like, it just to cover, not to win the game, just to be clear. Because it's like the Raptors have not handled size well at all. The Bucks are already pretty big. But, like, Giannis is, I don't have to explain. Like, he's obviously going to dominate. Dame, I'm like, maybe. I mean, like, the Bucks have played pretty well with just Dame and without Giannis recently, which is kind of interesting. But in any case, like, I would maybe like the Raptors' chances to cover a little bit more at that point. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It'll be interesting. I want to see if RJ can continue to have success in the paint. You know, obviously Brooks down there, and he's a guy who can really block shots and protect the rim. But we've seen RJ also touch the paint all the time, and that's the thing that's been really important. Him and Kelly together, you know, does bring a lot more stability to the starting five. Let's be honest. Like, the Raptors, whatever they put out in Minnesota just wasn't the Raptors, let's be honest, right? So, and hopefully to see Gary back in just for some shooting and some scoring as well. Like, look, we're closer to having, like, if these guys actually do play, we're actually closer to having, like, an actual rotation.
Yeah, like, think about it. If so, say all three of those guys could go, that was obviously a very bad team against Minnesota, but you're dropping in what it won't be because of Grady and Quickly, but, like, could be your starting five: RJ, Trent, Brown, Agbaji, Kelly.
Yeah.
You're getting 5 guys back who are in the top 8 in your rotation. It's entirely a different team.
For sure, for sure. You know what? Throw in the Doc Rivers factor. I think I'm going to pick the Raptors to cover. Wow. I haven't said that in months.
Cover that 15-point spread. That was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Let's take it a chance. Plus 15. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching this. Go. Although I'm not gonna lie to you, it will have to be a 2-screen experience tonight.
Yeah.
At the Lou household.
Yeah. We got NC State, South Carolina at 7, and UConn, Iowa at 9.
Yeah. I'm not trying to miss any part of that, but you will hear the Raptors Reaction podcast. Perhaps just with me a little bit distracted with another game on in the background.
You live reacting to Caitlin Clark deep threes as you're trying to. He's like, yeah. So Malik Williams. Oh my God, Caitlin Clark. Yeah, it'd be fun.
I'm hoping for more from Malik Williams too. Just like, not more in terms of, like, I need him to play well, but just like a more fair chance to, like, okay, you've gone walkthrough with the team.
Yeah.
You've done a little bit more. Just like, you know,
15 minutes off the bench instead of 31 as a day one starter against the best defense in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spice Soup. It's time to get fired up. Big thanks to our producer, Amit Mon, our board producer, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick, David Sis, Jared Manitat for helping behind the scenes. Thanks to our guest today, Michael Grange, and we'll be talking to you next week.